Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanacharya Yamuna Tira Vanacharya Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Jana Balava Jaya Giri Varadari Jaya Giri Varadari Jaya Gopi Jana Valabha Jaya Giri Varadari Jaya Giri Varadari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtadrashata Sishi Mahatabhai Charanvinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jaya Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jaya Premsa Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadatara Shri Vasudi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopu Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jaya Shri Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jaya Shinavadvipa Dhamma Ki Jaya Gangamaya ki jai, Yamunamaya ki jai, Tulasi Devi ki jai, Sankirtana Yagya ki jai, Grantarachi Madhvagvatam ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, Prithu Maharaj's meeting with the Kumaras, Text 45. Shainapatyam cha rajyam cha danda netritvam eva cha sarva loka adhipatnyam ча ведашастравит архати шайнапатьям ча раджям ча дандане тритвамева ча сарвалокадхипатьям ча ведашастравит архати Sainapatyam cha rajyam cha Dandane tritvam eva cha Sarvalokadhipatyam cha Vedashastra vidarhati Next.
Sainapatyam cha rajyam cha
Cha rajyam cha
Vedashastra-vidarhati
cha
shastra vidarhati
Patyam cha rajyam cha
Dandane tritvam eva cha Paralokadhipatyam cha Vedashastra vidarhati Sainapatyam cha rajyam cha Dandane tritvam eva cha
Mataji? Satyam cha rajyam cha Sainapatyam, post of commander-in-chief, cha, and rajyam, post of ruler over the kingdom, cha, and danda, ruling, netritvam, leadership, eva, certainly, cha, and sarva, all, loka adipatyam, proprietorship of the planet, cha, and vedashastravit, one who knows the purport of Vedic literature, arhati, deserves. Translation. Since only a person who is completely educated according to the principles of Vedic knowledge deserves to be commander-in-chief, ruler of the state, the first to chastise and the proprietor of the whole planet, Prithu Maharaja offered everything to the Kumaras. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada ki. In this verse, it is very clearly stated that the kingdom, state or empire must be governed under the instructions of saintly persons and brahmanas like the Kumaras. When monarchy ruled throughout the world, the monarchs was actually directed by a board of brahmanas and saintly persons. The king, as the administrator of the state, executed his duties as a servant of the brahmanas. It was not that the king or the brahmanas were dictators, nor did they consider themselves proprietors of the state. The king were also well-versed in Vedic literatures and thus were familiar with the injunctions of Sri Ishopanishad, Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. Everything that exists belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna also claims that He is the proprietor of all planetary systems, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Since this is the case, no one can claim the proprietor to be proprietor of the state. The king, president, or head of the state should always remember that he is not the proprietor, but the servant. In the present age, the king or president forgets that he is the servant of God and thinks himself as a servant of people. It would be good if it was like this. The present democratic government is proclaimed to be a people's government, a government by the people, for the people. But this type of government is not sanctioned by the Vedas. The Vedas maintain that a kingdom should be governed for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should therefore be ruled by a representative of the Lord. The head of a state should not be appointed if he is bereft of all Vedic knowledge. In this verse it is clearly stated, Veda Shastravit Arhati, that all high government posts are especially meant for persons who are well conversant with the teachings of the Vedas. In the Vedas there are definite instructions defining how a king, commander-in-chief, soldier and citizen should behave. Unfortunately, there are so many so-called philosophers in the present age who give instruction without citing authority, and many leaders follow their unauthorized instructions. Consequently, people are not happy. The modern theory of dialectical communism, set forth by Karl Marx and followed by communist government, is not perfect. According to Vedic communism, no one in the state should ever starve. Presently, there are many bogus institutions which are collecting funds for the public for the purpose of giving food to starving people. But these funds are invariably misused. According to the Vedic instructions, the government should arrange things in such a way that there will be no question of starvation. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that a householder must see that even a lizard or a snake does not starve. They also must be given food. In actuality, however, there is no question of starvation because everything is the property of the Supreme Lord. And he sees to it that there is ample arrangement for feeding everyone. In the Vedas, Katha Upanishad, it is said, Eko bahunam yo vidathati kaman. The Supreme Lord supplies the necessities for life to everyone, and there is no question of starvation. If anyone starves, it is due to misarrangement of the so-called ruler, governor, or president. It is clear, therefore, that a person who is not well-versed in the Vedic injunctions, Veda Shastravit, should not run for election as president, governor, etc. Formerly, kings were all Rajarshis, which meant that also they were serving as kings. They were as good as saintly persons because they would not transgress any of the injunctions of the Vedic scripture and would rule under the direction of great saintly persons and brahmanas. According to this arrangement, modern presidents, governors, and chief executive officers are all unworthy of their posts, because they are not conversant with Vedic administrative knowledge, and they do not take directions from the great saintly persons and brahmanas. Because of his disobedience to the orders of the Vedas and the brahmanas, King Vena, Prithu Maharaja's father, was killed by the brahmanas. Prithu Maharaja therefore knew very well that it behooved him to rule the planet as the servant of saintly persons and brahmanas. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki. Sainapatyam ca rājam ca danda netritvam eva ca sarva loka dhipatyam ca veda shastra vidarhati. Since only a person who is completely educated according to the principles of Vedic knowledge deserves to be a commander in chief, ruler of the state, the first to chastise, and the proprietor of the whole planet, Prithu Maharaja offered everything to the Kumaras. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Dinamine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Goravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatte Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Ajanulambita Bujokanaka Badata Sankirtanai Kapitaro Kamalaya Daksha Vishwambaro Dvijavaro Yugadharma Pala Vande Jagat Priyakaro Karuna Vataro. Okay. So Srila Prabhupada here in the purport establishes the principles of rulership. Who deserves to be a ruler and who cannot be a ruler under any circumstances. In the Vedas, specifically in Satapatha Brahmana and some other Vedic literature and also Manu Samhita, it is very clearly explained that the leaders of the society could belong only to two classes. Three classes. But the real leaders of the society are Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. Because of a simple reason, because their consciousness is broad enough to take responsibility for others. Everyone else is disqualified to take the position of leadership because he is narrow-minded, because he is self-centered, and because of this self-centeredness, he is more or less only concerned with his own interests. And this is the disqualification. The first and foremost qualification of being a leader is that you should not be concerned with your own interest. If you cannot do this, you cannot be the leader. If you're only concerned with your own interest, with the interest of perhaps a few people who are near you, your immediate family, you cannot be the leader. Because leader means you have to take care of others. this is extremely clearly said in the Vedic literature, and it's taken even to an extreme. There is a very interesting incident which is described in the Vedic literature about Manu. Once kings gathered around Manu Maharaj. By that time Manu retired and he was in the forest, living in the forest. So the kings gathered around him and they asked him to instruct them how to rule over others, how to give the instructions to other people, what it means to be the good kings. And Manu Maharaj starts talking. And he was so heavy. He was saying, you should do this and should do this and should do this and this and this. And you should, you know, sacrifice all your interest and you have to really give yourself out. And, you know, while he was speaking, the thunder started, you know, there was a thunder. And there were clouds, and everyone was kind of shaking because he was so heavy. He said, if you want to be a ruler, no problem. You can be a ruler. Everyone can be a ruler. But there is a price. There is a little string attached to it. You should not be egoistic. You shouldn't be selfish. You should give everything what you have to others. And then finally, somebody dared to ask him, my dear sir, that's all nice what you're talking about. We understand this. But do the king have some privileges? Because this is what we are concerned with. This is why people want to be kings and rulers, because of the privileges. Otherwise, why should they be the kings? So somebody asked, you know, you're saying you should do this, you should do this, you should do that, but what can we do? And he said, yes, kings have one privilege. People, seeing how virtuous they are, they will bow down their head. This is their privilege. That's it. Nothing else. So, this is the principle of Vedas. Vedas say, you know, everyone can be a leader. Like here Srila Prabhupada says that modern presidents, they're leaders or presidents for the people. Forget it. They're presidents or leaders for themselves mostly. You know, it becomes such a mockery. And they're only doing this for themselves, and they're forgetting that there is a heavy responsibility upon them. One of the problems why the qualification of the leaders is so firmly established in the Vedic literature is that the leaders are those whose actions are taken as praman. Krishna very clearly says this in Bhagavad Gita when he says that yadyata charati vse stas tatate vetara janah sayat pramanam kurute lakastat anuvartate. Whatever somebody on a leading position does becomes praman or proof for others to act. And we have heard this. We have seen this. You know, if leader is little sloppy in executing his duties or doing something, then every other person will say, you know, why should I bother? Why should I try to behave in a different way? So this becomes a praman for everyone. That becomes the reference point. Like, for example, Svavas Prabhu. I know that he is an exemplary because every mangularity he is here. And nobody else has an excuse not to come. If he would not do this, you know, everyone would say, yeah, right. Well, they might not say this, but they would think about it, you know. Why should I come? He doesn't come. But because he comes, others, they maybe sometimes slack in this, but still there is a very strong statement inside us that we should do it. We have to do it because the ruler is showing the example. There is a nice story in this regard about Birbal. At once Birbal was the Shah of Persia heard about Birbal. And Birbal was very witty, and he decided to check him. And he asked Akbar, the Mughal emperor, to send Birbal as the messenger, as the ambassador. So Birbal came to Shah with the presents from Akbar, and he had a lot of different presents. And when he entered the assembly hall, to his surprise, he saw that there are six different persons sitting on the exact same thrones. And they wear exact same cloth. Exactly, you know, same kind of arrangement, but there are six of them. And he knows that Shah is one. And he understands, this is the test for me. How I will distinguish who is the Shah here, who is the ruler, who is the king here. And he looked a little bit for a split second, and then immediately he came to one person, bowed down and said, Your Majesty, this is the presents from Akbar to you. And the Shah was shocked. He said, How did you recognize me? We all look the same. How did you distinguish me among these six similar persons? And Birbal said, it's very easy. I looked at everyone and the arrangement, and I looked at, you know, you are looking at me and everyone is looking at you. So I figured out, you must be the ruler here. So, but the purport of this story is that everyone is looking at the leader. Everyone is ultimately looking at the leader, and therefore leader should be exemplary in this regard. And his main example which he should show to others is that he sacrifices himself. He gives out himself. he should be capable of doing this, and only because of this he's capable of being the ruler. And of course here it is very strongly emphasized that the ruler should be Veda Shastravid, Arhati. Only those people who know Vedas, they deserve to be rulers. And therefore, King Prithu says, my dear Brahmanas, you should be the real rulers. The Kshatriyas never rule from their intelligence. They rule from the Vedas. Basically, these two classes of men, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, they are the rulers of the society because they have, and they cooperate very nicely with each other because they have the common denominator. The very word Shastra comes from Shastdhatu. And Shastdhatu means to rule. Shastra, or the holy scriptures, it's the books which rule the society. And those who know these books, they can rule. Those who don't know the books, they should find some other job. There are so many jobs in the society. They can sweep the streets and do some other things. But only those who know Vedas, they should rule. And in the Vedic society, from the very beginning, this very strong ties between these two classes are established. The Brahmanas should be respected by the Kshatriyas, and Kshatriyas should be respected by Brahmanas. They have a particular division of duties, it's not that, you know, that in every society there was a clash of interests. Srila Prabhupada mentions Karl Marx in his purport. And the very theory of Karl Marx is that if there are classes, there should be clash. Because every class has his own interest, its own interest. But in the Vedic society, and in fact it was admitted by Karl Marx himself, he was studying the history, and he said, in every society which I studied so far, there was a clash between different classes. There were exploiters and exploited, and they were clashing, and therefore revolution was there. Therefore, the solution for all the human problems was to eliminate all the classes. There shouldn't be any classes. Everyone should be a Shudra, and everyone will live very peacefully. So that was his crazy idea, which ruined the lives of so many people. Totally ruined. Smash the lives of so many people, because it's not possible. But he himself admitted a very peculiar fact. Karl Marx said that I studied all the societies and I figured everything out, but there was one society which I couldn't figure out. That was Vedic society. He said, I studied ancient Indian society, and there was no clash between the classes. There was no clash. There was cooperation. Because this is the basis of Varnashrama system. The Varnashrama system eliminates exploitation by eliminating envy. Yes, in the normal society, envy rules supreme. And because envy rules supreme, somebody wants to be on the top, somebody wants to be down, and everyone wants to take privileges. In the Vedic society, the situation is totally upside down in one sense. Of course, it's upside down in our society. There it's in a normal way. So in a Vedic society, the envy is eliminated because not the rights are stressed, but the duties are stressed. And if you want to be a Brahmana, no problem. Everyone can be a Brahmana. You can buy the Brahmin thread. It's cheap kind. You know, it doesn't cost you much. You can make it yourself too. But there is a condition. You know, you have to be selfless. Brahmana, it's fine. You can be Brahmana, but Brahmana should not take any salary. He should depend completely on God, and whatever he gets, you know, he gets. If he doesn't get, fine. You know, and if you want to be a wife of a Brahmana, it's also fine. You're welcome. Please be a wife of a Brahmana, but it means you will be poor. And king, fine, yes. If you want to be a great leader, be a great leader. But it means that you should be, again, selfless. In your own way. You should be brave, you should be bold, and you should be generous. You should give away everything. There was an interesting story about this in Mahabharata, about one sage traveling from one king to another king. And he wanted to get some alms from the king. And he would come to one king, and the king said, "Oh, my dear sir, it's very nice that you come. I'll give you everything which I have. Unfortunately, I don't have anything because I already gave away everything." And he would go from state to state to state, and he would find all the kings who gave away everything. The generosity is a very essential quality for a kshatriya. So if you want to be a kshatriya, fine. But you should not amass or accumulate the wealth by exploiting others. This is the principle of being the ruler or king. And this cooperation was very nicely established on the basis of respect. The basis of Vedic society is to diminish the level of envy. The modern society goes in a completely different direction. The modern society, the juice in the modern society is to become envious, to become competitive, and to become better than others. This is the very, you know, the very essence of the social life in the modern day, you know. Yeah. And envy is getting more and more increased. It's actually a plague of modern society. Everyone is envious of everyone others, and there is no respect. There is no strong emphasis on respect. In the Vedic society, the children were trained to be respectful. Because if you are not respectful, then the envy will take over your heart. And your life will be hellish, and the life of everyone else who is around you will also be hellish. It's very interesting how Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains why the Vedic society fell. In Sri Chaitanya Shikshamritam, he explains the fall down of Varnashrama system, and he says the fall down of Varnashrama system was because the cooperation between Brahmanas and Kshatriyas broke, because it disappeared. He says it started from Parashurama and Jamadagni. It's also interesting because we know Parashurama is the incarnation of God. But still, he blames Parashurama and Jamadagni for the fall of Varnashrama system. He says that actually Parashurama and Jamadagni were kshatriyas by nature, but they claimed themselves being brahmanas. And they started the conflict between the two classes. We know what Parashurama did with kshatriyas. He's kshatriya himself, but he said, "I am a brahmana and I will kill you all." And of course, kshatriyas were also kind of degraded at that time. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur specifically says that because of this, what happened, he says, because of this misuse of brahminical power, since Parashuram, the wrong system of birthright was established in Vedic society. The Parashuram said, we're brahmanas and this is our privileges, and he started judging according to the birthright. And since that time, this erroneous system of being brahmana or kshatriya, not according to your qualification, but according to your parentage, according to your jati, your birth, has been established. And then he said that then because there was this animosity between brahmanas and kshatriyas, what happened next? Kshatriyas decided to finish brahmanas, and they adopted Buddhism. Actually, Buddhism, the very essence of Buddhism is to eliminate brahmanas from the society. The Buddhists are very heavy against brahmanas. So then, you know, kshatriyas started fighting against brahmanas. Brahmanas started making faking scriptures. They were writing false scriptures. And then Vaishyas, they became giants, and Shudras became thieves. And he said this was the finish of the end of Vedic society. The society weakened because everyone was not doing what he's supposed to do. But in the beginning, and this is the foundation of Vedic society, and if we are to establish some kind of proper systematic structure, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the systematic social structure has to be established, then the principle is that kshatriyas and brahmanas have to respect, have to divide the duty, have to know what they're supposed to do, and to respect each other. Otherwise, there will be no proper peace in the society. The society will be chaotic, like modern society. In the modern society, nobody knows Shastra. And Shastra means, Prabhupada gives a very explicit statement, what does it mean to know Shastra? It's actually simple. To know Shastra is just one thing which you should remember, that you're dependent on God. Ishavasyam idam sarvam. Everything is coming from God, and God is the ruler. You're not the proprietor. The very basic mistake, or the simple mistake which everyone is doing, is that something belongs to you. You know, to know Shastra means to know that nothing belongs to me. That's it. If you want to be Veda Shastravid, you should know this one thing. Nothing belongs to me. Everything belongs to God. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat. And yeah, I'm just his servant. And because everything belongs to him, I'm just using something temporarily for his service. That's it. This is knowing of the Shastras. And, you know, every one of us has this tendency to forget. But to know Shastra means to remember about this. Srila Prabhupada is explaining, he's quoting Katha Upanishad, Eko Bahunam Yovidathati Kaman, that Krishna is fulfilling. The Kshatriyas, they have this problem. They sometimes think that everyone depends on them. There was a very interesting story from... I should finish 15 quarter after, right? Okay. Very interesting story from the modern history, from Shivaji Maharaj. Quite recently, there was this very nice king. They say that he was an incarnation of Lord Shiva himself. He was ruling over Maharashtra, and he was really feared by Muslims. At that time, India was ruled by Muslims already. And Shivaji was so bold, and Muslims, just by, you know, hearing his name, would faint because he was so strong. And he literally drove away Muslims, at least from Maharashtra, and this is the biggest part of India. And he had a guru. His guru was Ramdas. He was an ascetic, and he had only loincloths. And Shivaji Maharaj himself says that all my strength is coming from my obedience to my guru. My guru is so powerful that by following his example or his instructions, I get all my strength. So once they were talking with each other somewhere out there, and Ram Das, he kind of noticed that Shivaji became very proud because he's so bold and such a strong ruler, and the tendency would be that everyone is dependent on me. I'm feeding everyone, I'm protecting everyone. And his guru decided to teach him a lesson. And he said, there is a rock here. Please take the rock. And Shivaji took the rock. And he said, take your sword and smash the rock. Shivaji took the sword and smashed the rock. And to his surprise, he saw a frog coming out of the rock. He saw little water there and a frog. And Ram Das asked, did you see the frog in the rock? And Shivaji said, yes, I saw the frog in the rock. And Ram Das asked him, who do you think fed this little poor creature inside the rock? You think it was dependent on you? No, it was dependent on God. It was living there in the rock. You know, the point of this statement of Katha Upanishad is that everyone is dependent on God. There is one supreme ruler, and he is ruling over everyone, and he's feeding everyone, and everyone else, no matter how powerful you are, remain a servant. We are servants, and this is the constitutional position of every living entity, and we cannot change this no matter how much we try. And that's what it means to be Veda Shastravid, to know the Shastra. You know, if we forget this, we forget everything. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, while explaining the fall down of Varnashrama system, he says, as a result of this, the spirit of service disappeared in the society. This was the fall down of Varnashrama system. The Varnashrama system was there for thousands of years, and it was such a stable and nice arrangement, social arrangement, because there was this spirit of service. Everyone was the servant. Brahmanas were not exploiters because they considered themselves servants. Kings were not exploiters because they were servants. Shudras were servants, not only Shudras. You know, sometimes we think that Shudras are, you know, this low class. No, but, you know, they're as much as everyone else. And they're the servants. And Vaishyas were the servants. Everyone considered, that was so strongly established within the psyche of Vedic people, that were servants. And therefore the society was stable. And it is not there in the modern society. Therefore, you know, it's just a chaos. It's just a pandemonium. It's just a madhouse. It's really crazy. You know, I tell a little more story, just one little story, and then I finish the class. How the modern society is being ruled. There was one, you know, it's modern society, actually, in the Vedas, it is strongly said that if somebody doesn't follow the scripture, and to follow the scripture means to consider oneself as a servant. That's what it means. God is the ruler, and I am his servant. And in the Vedic society, it is said, if somebody doesn't follow the scripture, he's like an animal. That's it. He may have only two legs, but it doesn't matter. Very soon, he will have four legs. Instead of having four arms, he will have four legs, and, you know, everything will be nicely, properly established. You know, that's it. If you're not a servant, you're just an animal. And coming back to this modern society, because Prabhupada is very strong in the last paragraph of the purport, he says that the modern society, the rulers, they're not worthy of being the rulers. Modern rulers, they're not worthy of being the rulers because they don't follow Vedas. And there is an interesting story in this regard about one lady. She she was a zoologist. And she was studying the life of the apes, chimpanzees. She was in Africa for a long time. And there they also have some kind of social structure. They have a king, ape king, chimpanzee king. You know, and she was really, she's living with them, and she was studying how it's going on, how it's working, how the social structure is arranged, who becomes the next ruler. So she found out that they have a democratic system. They have an election. Very soon in America there will be election, and in Russia will be election, and it's a big excitement. In the chimpanzee society, it's also a big excitement. They also have election. And she found out a very amazing phenomenon, which is, you know, very interesting for every one of us to understand. She found out that who becomes elected as the next ruler when the old one passes away, the one who creates more noise. This is the only qualification. She found out that there was one chimpanzee who found an empty can which was left in the forest by some tourist. So the chimpanzee found this can and started beating on this can, and she was unanimously elected as the next king. And that's exactly what is going on in the modern society. Who becomes elected? Who can make more noise, you know? Who can do more propaganda? Who can do more noise? He becomes the next ruler, and everyone is suffering because of this. The whole society is just a mess because all this, you know, noise-making people become the rulers. But it's not the matter of making noise. It's just the matter of being the proper ruler. And it means follow the Shastra. And follow Shastra means to consider oneself as a servant. If you do this, fine, you can be the ruler. If you cannot, just sweep the streets and you will be okay. Because in this way you will understand that you are the servant. So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. I think I don't have... shall I show something about Moscow? I still can show. Question. Do you have any questions? I just wanted to show you a few slides because last time when I was here I showed the news about what's happening here, about Moscow project, and at that time it was very much unclear because the government, being in the condition which is described in this verse, not exactly Vedic, did not really support those who are following Vedic culture. And they gave the land and took back the land. And Prabhupada was very sarcastic about it because he said, all these people, they say, this is my land, but how is it yours land? Did you make this land? How is that this is your land? The land belongs to God, and that's a very essential point. But despite of all these difficulties which we underwent when the government took the land and it was very uncertain what's happening, we were still fighting and trying to get something from the government. And ultimately the government surrendered to our attacks. It was not easy because there were so many different methods which we had to employ. But ultimately we got the land from the government. And it's amazing how Krishna works, because ultimately it's Krishna who is behind all these dramas. So you know, initially the government gave us, can you hold the microphone?
Bring the wireless.
There is a river, and there will be a big park just beneath this triangular little spot. There will be a big park which is there. Anyway, I will not go into details. This is the area. It's actually a very sattvic area. They probably thought that we should be near the forest and river. So it's on the high bank of the river, and it's overlooking the river, and there is a nice forest there. The real land is little high up. On the left from this slide. So yeah, this is the area, and this is actually one of the most, that will be one of the most prestigious areas in Moscow. Already so many rich people are building their houses there, so somehow or other I think it's Krishna's arrangement what they did. And this is the actual plot of land. Unfortunately we can only build on this triangular part, not on the rectangular. And this is the new design which we developed, which I wanted to show you. There will be two buildings, and this is a parking lot down. There will be two buildings connected with each other. One is the temple. And according to Vastu Shastra, it's very essential that the sanctity of the temple is preserved. Of course, Prabhupada didn't take Vastu Shastra so much into consideration according to the modern situation, but still Vastu Shastra says that there should not be toilets in the temple building, for example, because it kind of contaminates the atmosphere or disturbs the sanctity of the space. So there will be separate temple building, and a separate building with ashrams, restaurant and shops and auditoriums and so many other things. So this is the plan, how it looks like, and this is this is the idea for the temple. There is a parking underneath, and this is the temple. But, well, probably marble or whatever. Let's see. Yeah, that's the idea. So we want to do something in Rajasthani style because it's more close to our culture, to our Gaudiya line and tradition. So this is the design for the temple, preliminary design with different elements of Rajasthani culture. And now I will show you how it will look like. It's at least this is the idea. And there will be separate building which is connected with the temple building. Yeah, this is the building. This is the building with different, you know, restaurants, shops, and rooms for preaching, auditoriums, yoga studios. It will be used.
All these Russian devotees are going to want to go back to Russia.
Anyway, this is the idea how it should look like now, and I just wanted to show you how we're planning to do this, and I'm again here to beg the blessings of Rukmini Dvarakadish and all the congregation of this nice temple established by Srila Prabhupada. I'm actually a humble servant of all of you. Oh, that's very simple. Financial situation is very simple. We need a lot. We don't have anything. We just have a good idea. It's around 10 million. That's what we project. Well, we are working on different angles. I'm trying to do something. I'm trying to solicit help from different people and in the society. Let's see, you know, we're hopeful. I think, you know, ultimately it's Krishna's temple and we're just his servants. We're trying to do something. We do need support. I'm wherever I'm traveling, I'm trying to get the support to explain how important it is, because Prabhupada did emphasize preaching in Russia as something very important for the whole society. And Moscow is one of the most important cities in the world. By far, it's definitely one of the cities which influences the whole world. If we are established very firmly there, it will be felt practically all over the world, especially in Europe. So I think it's strategically very essential for our society. We know how many Russian people become devotees. And, you know, basically, last Janmashtami, we had 10,000 people for our Janmashtami. And we have just a little shack for the temple. Really, we don't have anything, you know, but 10,000 people came. You know, just imagine what will happen if this temple is properly established. So I'm traveling and trying to raise the awareness. And if you have whatever little is there, because we literally don't have much. I mean, you know, most of the Russian devotees, they're not really well-to-do, but that's...
Are you given a timeline as soon as you start
constructing? Well, the sooner we start constructing, the better, but then we can drag a little bit, because when we start constructing, it's more or less irreversible. Before we start constructing, government may again do some tricks. They're not planning to do this, I'm confident, but, you know, we are safer if we at least dig something. Yeah, we are. The plan is to start the construction in the beginning of next year, ideally. So by that time, we should have something at least. Anyway.
Is anybody on the property right now?
No, it's clear. It's.
But I mean, like, are the devotees?
No, not yet. But we want to put something. First of all, we want to put the wall around it. But even for this, we need the permission. So we're working on this. Hopefully, by the end of the year, we will be okay with this. Anyway, that's the news. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I think the devotees should know a little bit about Maharaj's endeavors to acquire this particular land, plus the previous parcel, and all the difficulties that he went through. Most of the devotees here might not be aware, but you know, I have seen a couple of pictures where Maharaj had to meet with some of the delegates of the government. This last Mayapur festival, we had the opportunity to view some of the slides. And I think Buddy Narayan Prabhu, when he gave the GBC resolutions here, he kind of gave a little bit of an explanation. And he showed us some of the photographs of the round table of delegates that Maharaj had to meet with in order to, just negotiate the property issue and, of course, this other parcel that they just received. And it should be noted that, realistically, not to be completely offensive, but the personalities that he had to deal with were not from this material world. And I don't mean heavenly. I mean, just by the look of their faces, you could tell that they were very, as you mentioned in class, very envious. And their envy was wreaking you. You could see it just in the photographs. So I think we should really support Maharaj and really thank him for his endeavor. Prabhupada would be amazingly pleased to see this endeavor. And for the last several years, I've seen Maharaj in Mayapur and giving us an update. And I can see how it's been very stressful for him dealing with these individuals who are very demoniac and completely against Vedic society and the Krishna conscious movement. So his endeavor, I think, is amazingly his devotion to Srila Prabhupada, because otherwise, how could this go on? These individuals, he's practically fighting a whole country, literally, and it's incredible that he's been able to accomplish what he has accomplished. And he's right. I think if Prabhupada was here present today and he was to see this endeavor, he would be so pleased because of the atmosphere and the whole nature of how he was treated, how he's been treated, how the devotees have been treated, and still they're persevering, even at the cost of, I would say, his existence. You know, I'm not going to say that they're going to kill him, but I'm just saying, just that as his existence, he took this kind of, you might say, risk to in order to push on this movement in Russia. And so we should definitely support him and give him a big Hari Bol for his endeavor to push on Prabhupada's movement. And those of you that can, please support him. Please support him, because this is an essential project. If this temple goes up in Moscow, he's right. This will be a more than a feather in Krishna's hat or helmet, but it'll be like a new mukut. A wonderful one at that. Thank you very much, Maharaj.